Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 104, and the draft is behind us. And big thanks to a bunch of people who donated. And we'll rattle off some names, and I'll get some emails out this week. We'll rattle off some names at the end of the show. We're making a little push here as we get into kind of the slow time of the year, the slowest time we're going to get to, Dave, before really – you know, we're going to go through mini camp and OTAs, but there's not, you know, you really want that to be the quiet time because the only significant news that comes out of that typically is injury. So no news is good news. And obviously we'll get to the end of July with Steelers back at St. Vincent College and ready to crank it up again. But I want to appreciate the generosity for those of you who have donated. It's May 1st. For those of you who have paid your taxes and have any dollars left, feel free to contribute.
I'm not gonna be able to contribute. Uncle Sam got me good again. No, in all honesty, big shout out. We'll rattle off some names here at the end of the show here for the people that just donated over the weekend here. David, where the heck do you want to start? I guess I guess we can start with the thing that it was easy to see coming, and boy, if you didn't think it was going to happen after the Steelers' first round draft pick, you sure as heck probably thought it was going to happen after their first fifth round draft pick there. The Steelers drafted two safeties in Terrell Edmunds and in Marcus Allen during the draft, and at that point, and you know, we kind of talked about it, at least I think you and I maybe did, and me and Alex
20 times we talked about it along way over the last since February.
Yeah, you know, I said, boy, I'd lock this guy out of the facility right now as of I take his pass away so he can't hurt himself. And that of course is JJ Wilcox, and the Turk came a calling on him on Monday as expected. JJ Wilcox, who the Steelers acquired in a trade with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just prior to the start of the 2017 season, no longer a Steeler, and the Steelers will clear, you know, a little less than $3 million in salary cap space after the roster displacement all takes place there. But he didn't turn out. I don't, you know, he obviously didn't turn out the way General Manager Kevin Colbert probably envisioned acquiring him would turn out. Of course, the special teams penalties that he acquired, you know, middle of the season there. He couldn't ever get in tune with anything. The defense, special teams, anything, and now he's gone.
Yeah, I mean, look, this was an insurance policy for what the Steelers wanted to do, and it, you know, clearly we got a different view of things after the draft than we had going into the draft, and JJ Wilcox didn't fit into that plan. And so, look, it gives the Steelers some money, and it may be money that they don't get to spend. They can carry it over into next year. But it just, as most people know, they went into the draft with a pretty tight cap situation. Only the first three picks really impact the draft in terms of dollars, I think, in terms of the rule of 51 and how things are going to go in terms of the budget. But, you know, you get the point here. The Steelers could free up some cash with a guy who, you know, at best was a long shot to make the roster, and now he won't be coming into camp. So, really, it's no surprise. In fact, the surprise was to us a little bit that they hadn't made the move earlier. But, you know, once you get the first pick, and certainly when you get the fifth pick, and you're bringing two more guys into camp, the Steelers now have six safeties on the roster. And the question is it legitimate to expect the Steelers now to carry 11 defensive backs? And, you know, we'll get into that conversation as the offseason goes on. But certainly if you ask me today, I would be leaning that way to expect to see the Steelers maybe carry six corners and five safeties on the roster, depending on how the special team stuff works out. But those are guys typically that you would expect to be able to play special teams. So, yeah, that was the post-draft news for the Steelers, Dave. So let's get into the draft a little bit and just kind of, touch on on what happened since you and I spoke and then didn't speak on Sunday. And why don't you give me – look, I haven't done a lot of work on looking at tape of these guys, and I know you have. So why don't we kind of start in the middle here, because I think the most – maybe the most intriguing pick for the fan base and our listeners – is Jalen Samuels, because I think maybe when they flashed it on ESPN initially, they flashed him as a fullback, and that raises all sorts of what the hell's going on questions from the fan base. And then you get H-back, and then, you know, you dig into this a little bit, and this is a guy who's, you know, in college terms, you'd call him an athlete, use him all over, use him in a lot of different ways. What do you see in Samuels?
Yeah, and he is a very intriguing guy for sure, and you're exactly right. When they start, you know, you see that tight end or fullback designation, you know, stuck with him. He's far from that. If he's anything, if you want to list him as anything right now, it's probably wide receiver / running back. He lined up at wide receiver in the slot quite a bit at NC State. Lined up in the backfield as well, too. Here's the way they used him in, and I've made it through a lot of this 2017 tape and a lot of his 2016 tape. They would line him up as an H-back, and then they'd line him up as a tight end, you know, as an end of the line tight end. They would line him up in the slot there as a wide receiver. They'd line him up as a wildcat quarterback, motion him in to a wildcat quarterback, and then they'd line him up in the backfield as a running back. Now, when he was lined up as an H-back and a tight end, David, he wasn't asked to block. And I think he said as much during his conference, conference call with the media as well, too. And this is what Alex and I talked about on the show the other day. Look, this kid really had a bless you. He had a lot of production there in NC State. He had over 1,000 yards on the ground rushing and 28 touchdowns. He also had almost 1,900 yards in receiving and 19 additional touchdowns as well, too. So that's what? 47 touchdowns this kid has had, and 3,000 total yards from scrimmage, and that's not even counting the few kickoffs that he had, kickoff returns that he had there as well, too. So he is an athlete at 5'11 and a half and 225 pounds. It's going to be really, really interesting to see how the Steelers use him. Now, when going back through and looking at his tape, I wanted to see on these carries of his, especially the last 2 years, you know, how many of them were actually out of the backfield, you know, lined up as a traditional running back. And even that percentage, you know, remember he had 76 carries last year. You know, probably about half of those were only half of those were traditional running back carries, because there was a lot of wildcat in there. There were a lot of kind of the shovel pass from the H-back roll in there. There were some end arounds and those kind of things. And the most concerning thing I think about him, David, is it is so hard to find tape on him actually being asked to block, not only as a tight end and an H-back, but as a full-fledged running back. In other words, play action fake and him having to step up and identify and block a blitzer or a pass rusher. That's probably one of the most concerning things I think right now about him. And let's face it, if the Steelers are going to indeed consider him mostly as a running back, he's going to have to do things without the football in his hands. He looks great. You remember that conversation we had for a couple of years with Jonathan Dwyer? You know, how can he perform with the football not in his hands? We're going to find out real quick how this kid can perform without the football in his hands, and it could wind up making the difference of whether or not he makes this roster.
Yeah, it's always interesting when you take a guy like this, and, you know, the extreme example was Dree Archer. And, you know, Dree Archer was going to be a return guy, and, you know, hopefully, you know, you could find ways to get him on the field. And we got to the point where you say, well, if Dree Archer's only getting on the field eight times, it's kind of like putting up a red flag every time he comes on, because you're going to try and get him the football. And obviously that didn't work out at all. We saw, you know, flashes in preseason. We saw flashes in training camp, but they weren't able to execute it in the regular season. And the couple times kind of later in Dre Archer's second year, when the defenses started to ignore him, well, Ben was ignoring him too, because, you know, it just didn't work. So, you know, this is a catch 22 with Jalen Samuels. The Steelers aren't going to put him in a position where he needs to block often. It is not going to be a significant look. Assuming he makes the team, I'm not assuming he makes the team. If he makes the team, his skill set, you know, you play the guy's skill sets. He's not asked to be Jesse James, who is a guy who had to be, you know, he's a guy who has to be sufficient and at least capable of blocking a little bit to be able to be on the field. I don't know how much Samuels is going to be in a position where he needs to block. He's going to have to stand in front of guys on occasion. Yeah, of course. You know, you got to do that. Every guy in the field's got to be able to do it. You know, Antonio Brown, you know, do the best you can. Get out there, get in front of a guy, get in a guy's way. I think Samuels is going to be kind of that guy. It's for James Conner. It's going to be a much more significant thing here in his second year. If he's going to be, you know, running back to Steelers count in the future, that he'd be able to block. But I think you're right, Dave. We're going to put him in some different positions, do some different things with him. He's an athletic guy. There's no clear path to the roster for him, but certainly with the lack of depth at wide receiver and the question marks at running back, there is there is clear potential for him to make this team.
Yeah, and look, I mean, he's going to have to do some of those things, you know. How many times do you expect to see him lined up as a true end of the line of scrimmage tight end?
Zero.
Right. So that I mean, look, we can get away from that. I mean,
and probably zero as an H-back too, right? I mean, you know, maybe he's offset, but I can't imagine he's going to be, you know. So, you know, jockeying down the line, ready to blow somebody out.
Well, if he does, he might as well have a red light on his flashing. because they're probably gonna pitch him. You know, probably gonna be a shovel pass to him. I firmly believe they want to see if he can make it as a running back and a guy that they, you know, look. I mean, he needs to prove that he can function as just like the rest of the running backs on the roster. I mean, if he can do that, and that includes, you know, James Saxon said third down, right? You know, was one of the things that came out of his mouth. Well, what does a third down back have to do, David?
Third down back's got to be able to – look, if you're going to be in the backfield, and oftentimes, if you know, in a blitzing situation, you have to read and react. Are you going out or are you staying in? You got to be able to stand in front of somebody.
Right. You have to be able to eat up the grass and you know, become a fire plug in front of somebody there. So I think that might be the biggest obstacle. Right now, all he is a big Dre Archer. Okay, not as fast. He's got to prove to us otherwise. And look, he's not the heir apparent to Le'Veon Bell. I don't even think he's a true number two back and going to have a hard time, getting past James Conner even on the depth chart. But if he's going to be the number three running back instead of Ridley or Fitzgerald Toussaint or whoever, then he's going to have to do a lot of the little things, and that also means some special teams too, David, because you're not going to dress a third running back if you cannot get some level of special teams play out of him. Now, I went back through his stats during his time at NC State. It looks like he had, I think, 5 total special teams tackles there at NC State, so he has done that as well too. So, I'm going to throw this out there right now, and I want a true or false question, and you answer it. True or false, David? Jalen Samuels of the Steelers' 7 draft picks is the one most likely not to make the 53-man roster this year.
Oh, that's a good question. It's not what I was expecting. I would say. Well, I'll say false, and I just, you know, I can't tell you a lot about Joshua Frazier, but, you know, I do like I do like LT Walton. I know we're not talking about the same position exactly. I know we're talking more about Dan McCullers thing, but I would think it's more likely Joshua Frazier goes to the practice squad and Jalen Samuels, but I'm almost coin flip on it.
All right, well, let's walk through what you just said, though. Who are your three starters on a defensive line?
Well, we know the three starters.
Okay. Who is your, at least, your number one defensive end backup right now?
Tyson Alualu.
All right. Who is your second backup that's probably going to...
LT. LT.
Okay. And who was your sixth and final defensive lineman last year who did not get a helmet very much?
Yeah, and so that's the question. Do you carry six... or do you carry five? So, you know, we saw it. Well, I think a lot of us didn't think Dan was going to make the roster last year and they would carry five. And if they carry six, then, you know, Frazier's probably got a pretty decent chance. The flip side of that being the Steelers also carried six wide receivers, and it's not clear who those six wide receivers are going to be. So if you go, you know, three running backs, five wide receivers, and say there's an open spot for a hybrid guy, that's what we want to call him, maybe that's Samuel's avenue to the roster. So, again, we're going to get into this, you know, position stuff versus special teams, who does what, and it's going to be close. So, you know, I'd put those guys probably as a toss-up, but just to answer your question, I'll take Frazier as the less likely guy slightly over Samuels.
All right. I'll take Samuels as the guy, assuming only one of these seven don't make the 53-man roster. And let's face it, when was the last time every draft pick made,
We locked in Colin Holbrook last year, you know, immediately. Okay, they got the replacement. You know, for the long snapper, that was short lived.
Yeah, that comment didn't age nicely, did it?
No, it didn't. So let me transition because I want to. I think this is a good transition point to one thing here. And I tweeted about it yesterday, and I have some strong opinions about Quadri Henderson. I think Quadri Henderson. Now I don't know his academic situation and exactly what he was thinking, but it was pretty clear to me that Quadri Henderson was the guy who wasn't going to be drafted. He's again, you know, we use the Dree Archer terminology. Quadri Henderson is a historic college return man. And when we talk about Samuels, some of the things, you know, when I look at the I didn't think Quadri Henderson made a good decision, but okay, he made the decision. Didn't think he's going to be drafted. He wasn't drafted. But I will tell you, I don't know every team's kind of wide receiver depth chart and return / running back depth chart. But Quadri Henderson is in the perfect situation to make a team. Now, do I think he's going to make the Steelers? I still put it at less than 50%. But we talked about Samuels. And both Samuels and Quadri Henderson are not making this football team. They're not both going to make it. But what Quadri Henderson brings to the table is some of what Samuels brings. You know, if you watch Pitt play, of course, if you're in the Western Pennsylvania area, probably saw them play a lot. And Quadri Henderson can run a jet sweep. He's not going to run the route tree, but he does have kind of, you know, high-level speed. But obviously what you saw is you saw an elite return guy. And we think about the Steelers last year. Dave, the guy's name, the seventh-round pick from Houston on top of the return board, his name's escaping me. What was his name last year?
Oh.
They trotted Danny Smith out to talk about.
Oh, yeah, I'm drawing a blank all of a sudden. boy, how quickly a year gets away from you.
Well, so the larger point being here, you know, I didn't hear Danny Smith talk about Quadri Henderson. We didn't hear any coach talk about Quadri Henderson because they don't talk about the undrafted free agents. They don't, you know, come out and give their song and dance about it. But I have very little doubt that.
Oh, 2 years ago, DeMarcus Ayers.
DeMarcus Ayers, right. I have very little doubt that, you know, Quadri Henderson would grade out as good a return man as DeMarcus Ayers. Now, I also have little doubt that DeMarcus Ayers profiles as a better receiver. And we saw Ayers eventually, as we know, make the 53-man roster toward the end of the season. He ends up with the Patriots on their practice squad. And I don't know where he is now, but he hasn't been an impactful player in the NFL. But Quadri Henderson has a chance – I know somebody used the Tyreek Hill comparison. It's never going to happen. He's not going to be Tyreek Hill. He's never going to be that type of receiver. There's zero chance of that. But it's not. I would not rule out him being an explosive, dynamic. You know, Tyreek Hill's the elite return man. We can go back to the days of, you know, Eric Metcalf to, you know, bring it forward. However you want, name all the elite return guys you want. Quadri Henderson at least has the skill set to be an elite return guy. So, again, I don't think it's 50% chance he makes the team. He's competing with Jalen Samuels. Nobody chose to draft him for his elite return skills. But if you're picking a guy, you know, if you're picking two or three guys in the undrafted free agents who have the best path to a roster spot, Quadri Henderson's on that list for me.
Well, here's the thing with him, and I've got to obviously dive a little bit deeper. I mean, I watched a few Pitt games this year. You know, he had double the amount of rushing attempts during his college career than he did receptions.
Yeah, running that jet sweep.
He only had 45 receptions, and he had 98 rushing attempts. How many times did they line him up in the backfield as a true running back and hand it off to him?
I'm guessing not 10.
So you're saying most of 90% of his rushing attempts were in around jet sweep type of things?
Yeah, I think I would you know probably say you know they're running that three times a game, so I'm completely guessing on this, but I would guess it's a small percentage of his overall attempts.
I mean, 45 receptions in you know from 2015 to 2017 isn't a lot at all. You know, when it comes to him, it is going to come down. He's going to have to be a returner, plain and simple. What he can give you on offense would be gravy, but I think his only path to this 53. And you're right. I mean, there's no way you're going to have, or at least you wouldn't think there's a way that both Samuels and Quadri Henderson can make the roster. But to me, Henderson is going to have to – he's going to have to Stephon Logan it during the
– Yeah. So, Dave, this is a fascinating question because let's say we know Quadri Henderson, what he is as a returner. And you see in camp, you know, do you have his 40 time in front of you? What he ran? Did he run a 4.45 or something?
I can get it. Keep talking.
Yeah. So you know, for those of you listening out there, you think about what Quadri Henderson's situation is now. And, you know, it could be a punt and a kick returner. We know, you know, one of the things in the preseason I would like to see teams do, and it's, you know, this is obviously, if you're thinking about one thing, player safety, that's one thing. And if you're thinking about the other thing, trying to evaluate your team, that's a completely different thing. They're completely at odds. Now, you may want your kicker every opportunity he has in the regular season to kick it out of the end zone. But if I'm Mike Tomlin and I'm coaching preseason games or any of the other 31 NFL coaches, I want my kicker to kick it down to the goal line so I can look at my coverage units and make sure we're doing the things right. That's what I want to do. And if I want it, you know, and I want the other kicker to do it too, so I can look, make sure my blocking formations are right, and so that I can look at Quadri Henderson and see what he is. Now, the thing is, you would think we have a kind of 85% perception of what Quadri Henderson is as a returner. And now he's going to get a chance to return in four games. Let's say he gets a chance to return seven kicks. Maybe he doesn't get every one. Maybe he gets 5 to 7 kicks, and maybe he gets five punts. And you're going to make a decision on him whether he takes two of those to the house. Those are incredibly long odds if that's how you're going to make your decision. And this is one of the things that I always find interesting is, can you judge at all at St. Vincent, you know, in these practices, which are not live for those particular, those particular drills, punt and kick returns, you're not really doing anything live ever on those types of things. So you don't get a sense of the guy. So is that really the only chance for the guy to make the team is that somebody blows a coverage in, you know, the Eagles game in the preseason and he breaks one, or somebody makes a great block and he breaks one? Is that the only chance? It just seems to be not a very scientific, good way to make a decision if you think he's a great return guy. Now, if the jury's out, you're going to look at your sample size of 10 and make a decision, so be it. But this is one of the things, man. If you're a return guy, making a team – having to take one back in the preseason is a hell of a long shot for you to do it.
That's why we've seen in the past with some of these guys, you know, return a punt or a kickoff that they probably shouldn't because they
Right. I'm trying to make a team.
Yeah, I mean, I need an opportunity here, and I'm going to have to, you know, what do I have to lose type situation? And, you know, look, we've heard Mike. I don't know how much people believe him, but we've heard Mike Tomlin talk about, look, I want to see these guys underneath the lights in stadiums. You know, that's you know, and we've heard him say that that's how players in the past have made 53-man rosters with their play, you know, special teams play or whatnot in the preseason. Quadre Henderson, by the way, runs a 4.5 40 at the combine.
Yeah, not blazing. I mean, he's, you know, one of those guys where you're obviously going to sell the fact that he, you know, on tape he plays faster than he ran because he sure, you know, blew some of those returns out of the water.
He look, and like I said, he, what you might. May or may not get out of them on offense. Obviously, look, this is Dree Archer all over again. Except you don't have the stats backing it up. You know, 5'8", 192 pounds. I mean, you know, look, I understand the excitement about him, and I realize you watched quite a bit of him there at Pitt. I see. It's going to be a tough path for this kid and Jalen Samuels as well, too. I mean, and I don't think, obviously, it's an either-or between Henderson and Samuels. I think there's a good possibility that both those kids don't make it. Samuels, look, he's just going to have to be a – you think he's a Swiss Army knife when you watch his highlights at NC State. He's going to have to be that and more with the Steelers. He's going to have to stay healthy throughout all the training camp. And, boy, he's going to have to show us he can block because you don't want to put a player out there in a situation on offense – where he does have the flashing red helmet on. He's going to have to do some of the things that every other running back would have to do. That way it's not tipped off. Well, here he comes trotting onto the field. Look for him to get the football here kind of stuff. And he's going to have to obviously contribute on special teams. Quadre Henderson's path to the 53 is special teams, in my opinion, and special teams only.
Yeah, it's 90% special teams for sure. And, yeah, look, you're right. It's not an either-or because they both might not make it. But it's certainly not going to be both. I think we can safely say that. And you know, look, at some level here, when you talk about Darius Heyward-Bey and Justin Hunter, I mean, these guys are all competing for some of the same thing. And maybe Quadre Henderson is competing, you know, more specifically with Darius Heyward-Bey. Because, you know, we're not really thinking of Darius Heyward-Bey as a guy who's going to line up and even get, you know, 10 snaps as a wide receiver. So can Quadre Henderson, I don't know the answer to this. He's not a big guy, but can he play as a gunner? I know he played a little bit on Pitt's special teams. I think he played that role a little bit. I don't know if he can be effective, but if he shows he can be effective in that role, you know, one of the things it does is, you know, we don't know what Eli Rogers' status is going to be next year. And people know I like Eli Rogers, and Eli Rogers is a much better punt returner than the Steeler Nation gives him credit for because he fumbled that one against the Bears. But, you know, he is a solid punt returner. But, you know, one of the things is if you had Quadre Henderson, you don't have to ever think about putting Antonio Brown back there if Eli Rogers and Quadre Henderson are on the roster. So and you have your kick returner, which, you know, right now, if you had to guess who the opening day kick returner is it, you know, I don't think it's going to be Juju. So is it Cam Sutton? You know, who's going to be the guy who's the Steelers opening day kick returner? That spot's open. And if you had Quadre Henderson on the roster, you answer that question. But we also know how diminished the significance of the kick returners become. So it just, I wanted to, while we were talking about Samuels, because there is some connection to kind of getting into Quadre Henderson. So Dave, give me the lowdown on the other two Sunday picks as you want. Well, look, I imagine, you know, we have a sense of who Marcus Allen is. This is a guy who's not that fast. We think of him more, you know, prototypical in the box safety. He's not really going to be a free safety, back in the back of the defense. What do you see with him?
Yeah, just a striker. You know, as your buddy Tom Bradley said during the wrap up press conference, this kid will hit you. He'll smack you in the mouth. He loves to hit, not very fast at all. In fact, when you look at the 40-yard times of the top 10 or so safeties, his 4.63 at the combine sticks out like a sore thumb, if you will. But I mean, he can play downhill. You know, he's a prototypical strong safety, probably not one that you want lining up and having to run with anybody. But at 6'2", 215, he will pop you. So he's another one that I think, you know, you want to see what his upside is as a safety from now until the final 53-man roster is determined. And more than anything, this is one guy that you would think should be able to be your 52nd, 53rd guy or whatnot on special teams. Because this, you know, we'll see how they will they use him as an up back. Will they use him on a wing or whatnot on the punt coverage team? You know, you're right now expecting him at the very least, I think, to be a special teams demon his rookie season. So
yeah, he better be a stud. I mean, look, you know, somebody, you know, with the kid, the free agent kid, how do I pronounce his last name? Bray, what's it? How do I say his name? The free agent the Steelers signed, the safety, begins with B.
Nat Burry, yeah.
Burry. So Burry's going to, you know, he's the lead dog to take the Robert Golden role in terms of what he's going to do. But, you know, you got a guy like Marcus Allen, and he's, you know, he's going to compete for some of these spots. And again, for Marcus Allen, you know, the key to him making the roster here, and it's very simple. I mean, he's banking on them keeping five safeties. I mean, that's, you know, he needs the roster to shake out and show that he can play special teams, and he probably needs 11 DBs. I mean, you know, again, the day three picks, none of them are a lock to make the team. I mean, obviously, they're day three picks. They, you know, the Steelers made their, you know, their first four picks, and all four of those guys are going to make the team, you know, barring some, you know, something freaky happening. They're on, and the other three guys are all, you know, they got work to do.
Yeah, at least with Nat Burry, you've seen it in the NFL, you know. You've seen him come in and play some limited safety with the Giants. You've seen him play that up back role on the punt return. But I mean, this guy's, his nickname is the missile for a reason. So Marcus Allen's going to have to show that during the preseason as well too. And then you talk about, I mean, look, I mean, let's face it, when you get into that, those final roster numbers, it becomes less about what position you play and more about, can you help Danny Smith? So the talk about the whole four or five safeties. And remember, you want to talk about this, what this team has done during the off season. How about a safety dance? I mean, Mike Mitchell.
I like it.
Mike Mitchell gone. Robert Golden gone. J.J. Wilcox gone. That's three of your safeties from last year that's gone.
And four of your, you know, William Gay, four of your DBs.
You know, yeah, your William Gay's gone. And look at the guys you're bringing in. I mean, obviously Morgan Burnett's going to be there. Obviously Sean Davis is a second safety there. You would have to think. I mean, we talk about this. I mean, it's very rare for the Steelers to bring in.
Burry's making the team. He's right. Absolutely making the team.
Right. To sign a free agent that they don't make it. Now, of course, we had that happen last year with Nile Davis. And that, I mean, it's a rarity for that to happen. But you have to think Burry is going to make the 53 at this point. So, are you a fourth safety at that point?
Well, Edmonds is your fourth safety. Right. I mean, that's a given.
Edmonds is obviously going to make the roster there. Now, you can slash him up all you want, you know, safety, nickelbacker, you know, what have you. But, I mean, his core position, you know, he'll be listed as a safety, one would think, on the official roster. And then, you know, can, you know, this other spot is really a wild card spot. And that's why a guy like Marcus Allen, look, we could be David come the start of September. We could be talking about Marcus Allen, Jalen Samuels, and Joshua Frazier all not making the 53.
Yeah, they could all not make it. And, you know, the crazy thing would be, again, when you get into roster construction on the defense, I mean, all of a sudden, is it possible because of special teams, because you look at a guy and they look at a guy like Jordan Dangerfield and say, you know what, he's a good special teams player. Whoever you want to say, Marcus Allen, he's a good special teams player. All of a sudden, now, again, I don't see it breaking out this way, but all of a sudden you do the, you know, look at some crazy roster construction of five defensive linemen, seven or eight linebackers, and 12 defensive backs. I mean, because, and we'll get into this, and this is probably the right time to transition to this conversation about, you know, the Steelers, how they have guys on the field. We can call it dime. We can call it whatever anybody wants to call it. But it's clear that we're going to see a different schematic at times from the Steelers that we haven't seen a lot of before. Now, we've seen them play dime. We've seen them play big nickel, whatever you want to call it. We've seen them play with six DBs, with four corners and two safeties, with three safeties and three corners. We've seen a lot of different things. But if you have a guy like, you know, I don't know how much Marcus Allen's going to see the field, even if he makes the team. But you pick the guy you want to pick. Whether, you know, Mike Hilton's going to be your nickel safety, your nickel corner. But you pick whether it's Terrell Edmonds, whether it's Cam Sutton, whether it's, where Morgan Burnett is. What's going on with these guys and how they play them around? They may be lined up in what we think of as a traditional, you know, 3-4 with, or, you know, a nickel setup with two D linemen, sorry, and four linebackers with nickel behind them. But it may be a nickel behind them that looks very different in terms of what we call the guys' positions than what we're used to with Vince Williams and Ryan Shazier in the middle.
Yeah, you could have as many as like 14 or 15 guys rotating in on that defense, and that scares the hell out of me with the communication issues.
Right.
I mean, when you can't communicate, you bring in, a potential of how many new players in this defense this year? Burnett?
Bostic.
John Bostic. Terrell Edmonds.
And Cam Sutton. How much want to say with Cam Sutton, but you got three brand new guys and a guy who's very limited in his playing time who are going to see the field.
So how important is it for those guys to stay healthy throughout the entire offseason process and making sure the communication, because you could see a lot of, boy, you want to talk about the guy that sits in the press box, you know, yelling out what the personnel grouping needs to be to come on the field. There are going to be a lot of Chinese fire drills going on.
Well, I'll tell you, I love Tom Bradley, but he got his work cut out for him because he's new to this too. And there's going to be a learning process for him. So you got him coming in for him, it's an entirely new secondary. And for the secondary, there are a lot of new pieces going in there. So it's going to be, I would assume, Mike Tomlin and to some degree Keith Butler are going to have their noses in the defensive secondary all through the OTA mini camp and training camp. I mean, you know, Mike's going to have to be in there, making sure everything's going smoothly. Tom's going to have his hands full. And, Keith Butler, they're going to figure this defense out, and it starts with figuring this stuff out in the back end. So it's going to be fascinating how this goes and how they scheme up. And I'm sure the Steelers aren't, the past couple of years, we've heard more man. We haven't seen it. We guess here now with personnel, maybe scheme differently. We'll see. They're not going to throw everything away and start over. So, who knows how much they'll change. But certainly the personnel is going to look a little different than it has in the past.
Well, here's one thing that Kevin Colbert has stressed over the last couple of weeks here leading up to the draft. First and second down, here's the common denominator here. I think you're going to see a lot of John Bostic on first and second, third down. Look, John Bostic, injuries aside early on in his career, I think he's shown that he can play, that he can be a three-down linebacker. And I think you're going to see a lot of that, assuming he stays healthy this year. The question then becomes, what are you going to do on first and 10 if the opposition rolls out 11 personnel on you? Are you going to keep a guy like
Are you going to be stuck? Are you going to be stuck in that personnel?
Well, if they roll out 11, are you going to roll out your nickel or your dime?
Yeah, you have to have Mike Hilton on the field. You have now, whether you take off Vince or whether you take off the nose tackle. Man, I'm super slow
right,
here.
Right, Hargrave. Right. I mean, Hargrave. Look,
Jamon Hargrave. One of them is coming off the field.
At least.
And
that's what I'm getting at. I mean, we already know when they roll out 11, you're going to be in nickel. But are we going to be in nickel or are we going to be in a dime type situation? So, Vince Williams is going to be the guy there that more likely to see even less snaps this year now.
I'll suggest to you that what we're going to see a lot of is a 4-1-6. And I like where you're going with this. And I think what you're going to see is you're going to see Cam and Stephon and Bud and TJ as your – they're essentially going to be a front four. I don't think Bud's going to put his hand down. But, if Bud's playing well, you roll with that and you have Bostic, you slide, whichever one, whether it's Edmonds, whether it's Burnett, whoever it is, you slide them in, over the tight end maybe. And that's going to be, and then you're going to have effectively nickel behind that. And the nickel behind that's going to be, okay, who takes Burnett's spot? Because we know the other four spots, but who takes the other, who gets to see the field? Is it Edmonds? Do they get a first rounder on the field quickly? Is it going to be Cam Sutton? That's probably the more likely choice to start the season. That'll be Cam Sutton. And then you'll have, you'll have Davis, you'll have your three corners. So I think you may see what it's not going to line up just that way, but in terms of how we line up the personnel with their positions, 4-1-6 might be a schematic that we see a lot of.
Well, here's the thing. You have to – it's all about matchups in the NFL. So you have to – we talked the other day about safeties and how, Kevin Colbert talking about how a safety's got to be able to play free and strong and be able to rotate that. Because if an offensive coordinator can get you to rotate the wrong guy down – into a matchup there, then that's how he's going to attack you there. So you need more athletes on the field in against 11 personnel. That's why Vince, bless his heart, Vince is going to see a decrease in snaps.
No doubt.
For starters here. Mike Hilton's going to be Mike Hilton again, at least to start the season. He's going to probably be your primary nickel guy. But what happens, could we see instances where maybe not even Mike Hilton sees the field a little bit?
I'd be shocked.
Guess maybe a bigger tight end or something like that, to rotate in a guy maybe like in Edmonds or something like that. So more than anything, I think everybody listening to this podcast too. You hope to see more man situations against 11 personnel and situations like that. They still have to be able to stop the run on first and second down. I mean, look, you're still going to have teams that are going to look at what the Jacksonville Jaguars did last year and roll out heavy packages and say we're just going to smack you in the mouth this way, and that's exactly what Jacksonville did twice. They use that heavy personnel. So you've got to be able to have the heavy your base defense has got to be able to still function, because that's how Jacksonville bludgeoned you twice last year. So that's when a guy like Hargrave, and that's another guy. I mean, how much playing time is a guy like Hargrave going to actually get this year? He didn't really see all that much last year, and everybody keeps saying, I've heard a few people tweet at me this offseason, oh, they need a bigger body nose tackle, one that can two gap and play against the run like Casey Hampton did. Well, here's the fact of the matter is you just don't see, there's just not that many opportunities to roll out a true base 3-4 front. I mean, that's
right. The teams that do it are obviously playing, they're essentially playing a 4-3 with a nose tackle.
your base is your sub package now.
Yeah, right. No doubt. No doubt. Man, just for numbers purposes, I mean, Hargrave played 46% of the snaps last year, which was higher than we both bet to start the season. So, you know, look, there were some defensive line injuries. Guys missed games. So he played when it was two down linemen. He played some. And I think we'll see that. We'll see him in that rotation with Alu-Alu about, you know, in that Cam and Stephon won't be the only guys on the field with two down linemen.
I would bet that he plays less than that percentage of snaps this year.
If everybody stays healthy, I absolutely agree.
You know, because now you want to try to get situations where you're getting Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt some breathing time, you know, off the field. I mean, you want them, I think, playing right around 75% of the snaps, if possible, you know, to try to preserve them for the long haul. But on the flip side, you're paying them an awful lot of money back to the
defense. Cam played 80 and Tua played 58. Now they're both missed games, but you know, yeah, you want them on the field 75-80% of the snaps.
Now here's the thing, you know, back to whatever you roll out there defensively against, you know, say 11 personnel. You know, you got to get the pressure with the four, whoever the four are. You know, you've got to be able to get pressure with the four, and hopefully be able to cover on the back end with more man versus zone this time as well too. So, and look, I mean, we you know, even though Terrell Edmonds is a safety / dime backer, I mean, is he going to see the field more than 250 snaps? You would think they were going to try to find instances to get an athlete like him on the field to defend against what Kevin Colbert says teams trying to go more horizontal on defenses nowadays than vertical.
It's going to be very interesting to watch, and you know, people are going to, you know, say, well, they're not doing the same thing. Look, when they're trying to get six DBs on the field, it's going to be interesting to see who they set up first here. Cam Sutton, who's got a year experience, was a third-round pick, or Edmonds, obviously the Steelers' first-round pick this year. Because, you know, and we'll get into this debate when we get into Mason Rudolph a little bit. I'm not sure, you know, people understand how difficult the transition is, not just at quarterback, but everywhere. You know, how different it is to go to the NFL. I mean, you know, the Steelers tried to get Artie and Sean Davis on the field quickly, and it was, you know, half the season. I don't expect to see Edmonds really, you know, on the field much the first half of the season, particularly, you know, because Sutton obviously, you know, we hear this, you know, all the things we hear out of the draft, we probably overplay. Cam Sutton, smart guy, picked it up, played all the different positions in college, and he did see the field last year, so he actually did play. So he's going to be light years ahead of Edmonds, you know, going to St. Vincent. I mean, it's just the way it's going to be. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, when they start working dime packages, is, you know, who's running with the first team in that dime stuff when they do it.
You know, we've already said, well, this guy's going to have to play some snaps, and this guy's going to have to play. We've got a lot of guys that's going to have to play some snaps, you know, so that's why I say, you know, we can see a fit at some point as the season progresses. We can see 15 guys rotating around.
Well, no doubt. I mean, I'm just looking at the numbers last year, and I'll just give our listeners who might not have a great sense of it the percentage of snaps guys played, and obviously guys are going to get hurt. So it's part of, you know, that's part of the equation. Hayward was at 80, Tuitt at 58, Alu-Alu at 44. So, you know, we're talking about all guys above 40 or, you know, essentially regulars on the defense. Hargrave at 46, Dupree at 81, obviously Ryan Shazier injured, 68. TJ Watt, 77. Vince, 75. That number is going to be coming down. And then, you know, other guys above 40, you get into the secondary and guys, you know, played significant time. Sean Davis, 97. Mitchell, 70. I missed some of the corners. Artie, 99. Joe Hayden missed some games, 63. So the guys above 40%, let's see who we had here. We had Hayward, Tuitt, Alu-Alu, Hargrave, that's four. Dupree, 5. Shazier, 6. Watt, 7. Vince, 8. Hayden, 9. Burns, 10. Hilton, 59. That's 11. Sean Davis is 12. Mike Mitchell's 13. So you had 13 guys playing above 44% of the snaps. And then you had a bunch of guys who played around 20. And if you throw, you know, you know, probably, you know, a guy or two more in there. I think you're right, Dave. I think your number's on. 14 or 15 guys, I imagine, are going to play at least kind of 40% of the snaps.
Yeah, and then, of course, you're hoping no injuries, too, because, boy, what a shakeup. What if you lose a corner? Sutton has to go outside, you know.
But, you know, at least you have some guys there now. I mean, I feel a little more comfortable. Last year you lose a corner and it was Cody, you know, you had a rookie and you had Cody Sensabaugh. I feel like they're in a little better spot than they were.
Was Cody Sensabaugh a winner this past week?
Well, I think so. By the way, he played 25% of the defensive snaps last year, which was much higher than I know he filled in for Hayden, but it was higher than I expected.
And it was much higher than you wanted. I mean, than you wanted it to be.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Look, just the fact alone that the Steelers did not draft a cornerback this year gives.
But, you know, we kind of caught. Well, I was saying that. I didn't see it because I just. You know, had a full house as it was. So
I think, look, they obviously looked at a few guys. I think if a few guys would have been there mid round that they liked, or even later rounds, I think we could have seen one. I don't think it was totally out of the question to think that they couldn't have or could have either way, because I you know, they brought in the kid Duke Dawson out of Florida. I really think they liked both those undersized corners, the Maddox kid out of Pitt. And the who's the kid out of Penn State? Grant Haley. I really think they like both those guys. But here's the thing, man. Boy, I don't know if I talked about with you or Alex. This team likes those All-Star game guys. So you know, if you don't go to the All-Star game, and you're a senior, you know, odds are probably good that the Steelers are not going to draft you. Now, Joshua Frazier also obviously bucked that trend this year, but boy, the Steelers already knew quite a bit about him with Dunbar.
Well, tell me about him. Let's get into him. Give me an assessment.
He was a kid that probably we would be talking right now about being, you know, maybe a third round guy had he not gotten Wally pipped. You know,
by DeRon Payne.
Right, by DeRon Payne and a few of those other guys over there. You know, once you play at a talented school like Alabama, if you miss any time early on with an injury, you got a chance.
Good luck.
Yeah, you got a chance to get run over from behind there, and I think that's exactly what happened with him. Now, when he was he didn't start any at Alabama, but when he was asked to play. Make no mistake about it. He's a run-stopping defensive tackle that has enough athleticism to him that he can probably pressure the pocket, move the pocket a little bit. Okay, he is a run stopper first. But you know, Nick Saban, who's not one that hands out a lot of attaboys, you know, in the middle of the season last year, October. He was speaking pretty glowingly about a guy like Joshua Frazier, about when he was in there and what he was that he was accomplishing, what he was asked to do. So this guy, plain and simple, is a guy that's brought in to push Daniel McCullers off the roster. We probably debated it every year, David, about are you going to keep five or six defensive linemen? They're keeping six, brother. I mean. I will be shocked if they don't keep six again. I mean, it's just something. It's like the Steelers and three quarterbacks on their 53. Six defensive linemen is just what they seem to keep. Now, who's going to be the six? I think Joshua Frazier has a good chance at being that guy that doesn't dress, a guy that you keep. You know, look, I mean, Hargrave is your number one guy, but if something happens to Hargrave and you need a guy to go in there and play the 12 base defense snaps for you, Frazier would be that guy. I like Frazier's chance of making the 53-man roster more than I like Samuels and Allen's chances to make the 53-man roster.
That's interesting. Okay, all right, good stuff. Let's get into the undrafted free agents. And I know the kid who stuck out for you is the kid from Florida State, the inside backer. Obviously, with the Steelers not going, you know, that direction at all. which, you know, look, come on, we talked on Saturday when I was in Austin, and I said, I bet your house on it that they'd go linebacker, and now you're homeless. So
thanks.
that was an unfortunate outcome, but hey, I still got my place, and now this kid's got, you know, again, I'm not going to say an inside track. They didn't draft him. You know, Matt Williamson likes to say, what, you know, teams, when they what they do in the draft, that tells us something. They are signaling loud and clear. And the Steelers chose not to draft a linebacker. And I, you know, we can all make a lot of different conclusions about it, but let's just remember, every guy they took where they took him. I don't care that Kevin Colbert says we have a first-round grade on Mason Rudolph. If they clearly saw Mason Rudolph as a guy who was going to be the Steelers quarterback in 2019 – it would have taken him in the first round. They didn't. So he can say whatever grade, but they took him with the 70-something pick, and they took guys in front of him. They didn't draft this kid from Florida State as an inside linebacker, which, you know, we perceive as a position of need. Having said that, you know, there seems to be some room on the depth chart.
You would understand a guy with you know, the seemingly talent that Matthew Thomas has coming out of Florida State has, why he would choose, you know, I'm sure that his phone was ringing towards the end of the draft with a lot of teams wanting to sign him as an undrafted free agent. It's easy to see why maybe he chose the Steelers over another team, because opportunity. And you would think he's going to have at least a, you know, the opportunity to make the 53-man roster, a better opportunity to make the 53-man roster with the Steelers, especially being as how so many of us were expecting this team to draft an inside linebacker, and they didn't. Now, 6'2", 3/4 pounds, 232 pounds out of Miami there. He had, you look at his Underwear Olympics Peace Park score, 148.6, just off the charts. I mean, 4.58 second 40-yard dash at the combine. I think he logged 4.44. Somebody had him at the at his pro day. When it came to that, just, you know, measurables off the charts. Last 2 years at Florida State, was a starter, 162 total tackles during those two seasons. He had an interception, a forced fumble on top of it there. I think he had a couple of sacks at Florida State. Now, he had a couple of red flags surrounding him as well, too. We'll start with two separate shoulder surgeries while at Florida State during his first couple years there. He was suspended for the first half of the 2014 season for failing the drug test right before the BCS championship game against Auburn at the end of 2013. If that's not enough, he did not play in 2015 because he lost his academic eligibility there. So really, we got a two-year guy here at Florida State that, you know, had a couple of issues. He's a little bit older coming out, you know, having that medical red shirt and missing a complete season. You know, he's coming up on his 23rd birthday here. Obviously, David, if he's going to make the roster here, it would be as a number four linebacker, right?
Fourth inside guy behind Matakevich, or, you know, look, LJ Fort's on this team. People know how I feel about LJ Fort. You listen to Kevin Colbert. Dave, let me make sure I correct. Is LJ Fort under contract right now?
Yes, he is.
Okay. So, and you listen to Kevin Colbert talk about Matakevich, and, you know, again, it's the Tyler Matakevich who was the Butkus Award winner coming out of Temple. I mean, you know, he talked about him. You know, again, two things. One is very productive in college. Two is every team passed on until the Steelers took him in the seventh round. Great special teams player. Yeah, all that's good. But Kevin, again, you know, rang the bell for Tyler Matakevich as a guy, say, you know, he got hurt the same game as Ryan Shazier. We didn't get to look at him. So clearly Tyler Matakevich has the inside track to any of these positions, in my mind. Certainly, certainly Bostic's position, but, you know, I kind of thinking it's probably both positions. As we sit right now, if somebody were to get hurt. So are they going to keep five inside guys, or can he beat out LJ Fort? Because Matakevich is going to be on this football team.
You want to hopefully only have to carry four inside linebackers this year plus Edmonds. whatever you want to classify Edmonds, you know, as.
Because it's not inconceivable that they only carry three outside guys. Now, that means Keon Adams and Huguenin, you know, Fernando, whatever his name is, Huguenin, are both going to be on the practice squad because they're not going to walk around practice and, you know, whatever with, you know, four outside linebackers. But, you know, there is a scenario here where with all these defensive backs and with, you know, your thoughts on the defensive line, you know, we could go from conversations about having 10 linebackers to having 7 linebackers.
I don't know about that low, but I think because of the way we think the scheme on the defense is going to be this year, that's why I say whatever you classify Edmonds is, because he's going to be – you would think,
and even Burnett to some degree, right?
Right, right. You would think those guys are going to spend some time in the box, you know, third down and long situations, 2-minute drill situations. There's going to be situations where you only have one inside, true inside linebacker on the field, correct?
I think plenty of them.
Okay, so in other words, if a guy like Fork is look, your number fifth, if you're going to keep 5 inside linebackers this year, David, that number 5 better be a guy that just playing on all 4.
Yeah, and you do have two of them. I mean, both Matakevich and LJ Ford are those guys. So then it means this kid's got to show great promise to be, you know, probably also play special teams and show great promise.
This kid's main objective right now, Matthew Thomas, is to beat out L.J. Fort, I think, first and foremost.
That's his easiest path to the roster.
And that means being a core special teams guy. He better get to. I'd show up that first day of rookie minicamp, David. I'd bring Danny Smith a whole tub of bubble gum. If I'm Matthew Thomas, I'm serious. You think I'm kidding? I would go in. I would walk in. I'd say, "Where the heck is this Danny Smith guy?" That would be the guy. I would be all over Danny Smith from here until I'd shine his shoes for him. Everything, because I think Matthew Thomas. That's his main path to the 53. Now, obviously, he's going to have to show he can play a little bit of inside linebacker, but if we're ever getting to the point during the 2018 season where we're talking about Matthew Thomas on the field for defense, something's gone wrong there. But, I mean, I do think of all the undrafted free agents. You know, you talk about Quadre Henderson and all earlier in the show. I think Matthew Thomas, A, is the highest profile one, and I think seemingly his path to the 53 is the most achievable. Now, with that said, we could get 3 weeks from now and they cut. What are we going to talk about? They cut Matthew Thomas 4 weeks from now or what have you. I don't think that's going to happen, but, stranger things have happened. But it does look like his path to the 53 is certainly achievable as we sit here now. Alex and I ran through the other undrafted guys. You know, I think Adonai, who we have out of Toledo, the outside linebacker, who we have an interview with up on Steelers Depot, Ola. Let's just call him Ola. That's the easy way to get around that. Out of Toledo, I think he's an edge rusher that, definitely like his chances maybe to compete for a practice squad. Outside of that, I suppose maybe him and Keon Adams could go at it right now. In fact, who's another big winner this past weekend? It's got to be Keon Adams, right?
Sure. But both he and Huguenin, and you know, whatever you think of them, it's nice to not bring in studs to that are clearly going to get in front of you.
So I think Ola and I think Matthew Thomas are two guys to get most excited about here. And then obviously you talked about Quadre Henderson there as well too. I think those are the three priority undrafted free agents, if you will, there. But Matthew Thomas will be fun to watch. Hey, look, at very least, right? He should be able to compete for a practice squad spot.
Okay, so let's get to kind of the disagreement that Alex and I have had, which we were look, everybody knows. Look, Dave and I disagree. Alex and I disagree. This is not, all these conversations are not about, you know, whatever terminology I use or Alex uses or Dave uses. It's never about the individual. It's about trying to express our opinions and our level of conviction. And I can't tell you how off base I think Alex is on this. And so his point is, Mason Rudolph, the Steelers have a high value on him. You don't look at him as a third round pick because, you know, they have a first round grade on him. And Landry Jones is more or less just a guy. And they got to move Mason Rudolph along quickly to get him ready, find out what you have, because, you know, he's going to be the future of the franchise. And I think I'm summing that up relatively fairly. Alex put an article up this morning at 9:30, so it's been up for about an hour. You can check it out. You can follow the Twitter feed. And so you can get a sense of exactly what he's saying. So, you know, my point's much bigger than this, and I'm not calling Alex naive on this. I will say, you know, if you look at what Ed Bouchette wrote yesterday, if you look at, you know, Ray Fittipaldo's chat yesterday, if you look at some of the stuff that other analysts have written, you know, all of them assume that Landry Jones is going to be the backup for the 2018 season. Let me tell you why I think that's the case. Mason Rudolph, no matter what the Steelers said about what they think about him and what grade they have on him, first round grade, they took him with the 70-something pick in the third round. Okay, you can say he had a first round grade on him. I don't know how many guys they have a first round grade on. I don't know if that number is exactly 32. That number could be 20, could be 50 for all I know. I don't know what, you know, how they do their grading, but they obviously think a lot of Mason Rudolph. We heard a lot of, you know, complimentary things about Josh Dobbs last year. You know, the fact of the matter is, if you thought Mason Rudolph was really going to be your guy, you know, you don't take him. You don't wait till the third round to take him. You take him. And if you say, well, they address the positions of need, we heard them say a million times, and Dave and I both ignore that statement all the time. But you can't tell me you're going to believe some of the things they say and then not some of the others. You know, they didn't say they'd trade Martavis Bryant. They traded Bryant. You know, there's smoke screens. You're going to compliment all your draft picks to a certain degree. So, of course, they liked Rudolph, and it was clear from, you know, some of the comments out of the pro day that they did. But, you know, when it was a choice of James Washington or Mason Rudolph, they took James Washington, wanted to get the receiver they wanted, and that's what they did. So they didn't draft Mason Rudolph for this year, okay? He's not going to be the quarterback this year. I think we're all very clear on that. Now, the other thing is, you know, today, Josh McCown is a better quarterback than Sam Darnold. Tyrod Taylor today is a better quarterback than Baker Mayfield. I can go through, you know, A.J. McCarron is a better quarterback than Josh Allen. And we can go all the way through, and I know everybody's going to say, well, Lamar Jackson's a better quarterback than Joe Flacco. Whatever. The point is, every guy who's played in the league with some level of experience is a better quarterback than a guy who's never seen an NFL defense for a second in his career. Now, that will change quickly for some of the guys, and maybe it's Josh Rosen gets the first opportunity because Bradford gets hurt. Or maybe just based on talent, Sam Darnold gets the first opportunity. Or, you know, I see some guys say that Baker Mayfield versus Tyrod Taylor, that's the talent differential that will exploit itself most quickly, and Mayfield will be the first guy on the field. Now, I know people aren't going to love hearing this, but today Landry Jones is a much better quarterback than Mason Rudolph. It doesn't mean for one second that Mason Rudolph doesn't have higher upside. Clearly the Steelers think that. They may have thought at the draft last year that Josh Dobbs has higher upside than Landry Jones. But Landry Jones has played a game against the New England Patriots in Heinz Field. And a game, you know, arguably the Steelers should have won. And he played reasonably well. And he started four or five other games in the NFL. And he's played a variety of other games in the NFL. He's 6 years in the system. If you had a quiz each Friday night or Saturday morning on the defense the Steelers were going to see the coming week, I don't know whether Ben Roethlisberger or Landry Jones would win the quiz. Ben would win, you know, the better quarterback, the better athlete. But Landry Jones might know the offense and the opposing defense that week better than Ben. He's a smart guy. Ben talks about it all the time, how he likes Landry in the room. They have a great relationship, all this stuff. So Landry Jones knows what's going on. Your number two quarterback every week of this coming season has to be the guy who gives you the best chance to win. And I can't see any way that Mason Rudolph is going to play. Think about the four preseason games that come in. Josh Dobbs is going to go to camp with the Steelers. So in week one, Josh Dobbs and is probably going to play the first half of the first preseason game, and Mason Rudolph is probably going to play the second half. In week two, Mason Rudolph probably gets the first half, and Landry Jones gets the second half. In week three, maybe Ben gets the first quarter, Landry Jones gets the second quarter, and, you know, if Dobbs is still in the mix, maybe let's say Mason Rudolph gets the second half, and in week four, Jones gets a half and Rudolph gets a half. Mason Rudolph is going to see maybe four or five quarters of play this preseason. There's no way you're going to go into the Cleveland Browns game, no matter what you see from Mason Rudolph. And if Ben sprains a knee or busts his pinky or whatever, you're going to say, well, let's turn to Mason Rudolph because he gives us the better chance to win. And over the course of the season, as you go on from there, Ben's going to take 80% of the reps in practice. He takes Wednesdays off. And you're going to keep Landry Jones ready, and you're going to give Rudolph all the opportunity you can. But there are many less practices. None of them are in pads. It's all skeleton drills. There's no way that Mason Rudolph is going to understand the Steelers' offense as well as Landry Jones. I think there's no way by week 17 that he'll understand it as well as Landry Jones. And I can't see the talent discrepancy. I can't see, you know, the lack of – with Landry Jones knowing more, even if Mason Rudolph is more talented, I cannot see any path that gets him to the backup QB so that he's dressed and Landry Jones isn't in a meaningful game for the Steelers. Now, if it's week 17 like it has been the past couple of years and, you know, you give Landry a half and Mason Rudolph a half, fantastic. But I don't understand. Like, I get that Alex's view and many people's view is you want to develop this guy as quickly as possible. But as Davis said, if things go according to the Steelers' plan, Mason Rudolph isn't going to see the field the next 2 years unless it's a week 17 game that doesn't matter. So your job isn't to prepare Mason Rudolph quickly. Your job is to prepare Mason Rudolph as best you can so that in 2020, you know, he may have a chance to be the Steelers' starting quarterback if for whatever Ben decides to retire. You're not trying to get Mason Rudolph ready to be the backup in week five. That is not the goal. Landry Jones is that guy. You're trying to make Mason Rudolph the best long-term quarterback you can be, which is why Josh Allen's going to sit on the bench and why Darnold's not going to start week one. You know, the upside, we all know the upside's higher, but these teams are still trying to win games, and they don't want to damage the quarterbacks by putting them into situations that they're not ready to handle. And that's going to be the situation for Mason Rudolph as well, you know, most of this first season. All right, rant over.
All right, if you look back at last year's first two preseason games, I don't believe Landry Jones there or Ben Roethlisberger played in either one of those. I think it was
Dobbs and
who was the kid? Houston, was it Houston? Drawing a blank there. The Colts game was the Colts game was the third one. It was Houston. It was the Houston kid. Dobbs in Houston. So, in your first two preseason games this year, there's no sense. If you want to let Ben hand the ball off twice,
he's not going to play. Because you got Dobbs. You got guys. Dobbs is going. If Dobbs comes to camp, maybe they each get a half the first two preseason games.
What I'm getting at, there's absolutely no reason to play Jones or Roethlisberger in the first two preseason games. None. What do you accomplish by playing those two?
Well, it's just okay. Then if you're going to play, then you might not play the other two in the last two preseason games, then, or just maybe a quarter or so.
Right.
If you're going to give, I was going to give Landry half of game four and half of game two, but if you're going to give him most of game four, then yeah, you don't need to play him in game two.
I think you give Mason Rudolph every opportunity whatsoever in those first two games to prove,
you're going to give Dobbs an opportunity as well, right?
I'm splitting time. I mean, you can.
Yeah. So, right. Dobbs going to get the first half. He's a year older. Rudolph's going to get the second half in those two games. Let's call it that. Right. Fair enough.
Yeah. And you could probably flip one game and flip, let one have one start and let the other have the other start. But.
And let's remember, by the way, they will have then both probably not played more than a series against a first team NFL defense.
Sure. Sure. Go back to Ben Roethlisberger. No way in hell was Ben Roethlisberger going to be the number two going into the season had injuries not happened.
Right. And that's 2004. He's the 11th overall pick. He was going to be the number three quarterback.
They had no intentions, and Colbert said as much, no intentions of playing him his rookie season. Now, Batch had a knee. That's why I keep saying I have a feeling that all this is going to be moot because so these things have a funny way of working their way out. For God's sakes, David, the Steelers have signed Kirk Kittner in 2004.
Well, the thing is, though, teams look at this differently now. Quarterbacks don't play in the preseason, so they're not – you know, they're much less likely to get. I don't think a quarterback's going to get hurt. Well, I don't think Ben's going to get hurt. You know, we'll see if Landry Jones gets hurt.
Well, Batch got hurt during camp.
Right.
You know, and had the knee issue, and that's what started the whole ball of wax here with him. I want to see as much as Dobbs and Mason during the first couple of games, and then we'll go from there. I mean, it's not like Landry Jones' cap number is killing you.
Oh, no, Landry Jones is making a team. I mean, he's the backup. He is the backup today. You know, he's the backup.
Right, and if that's the case, and we would, there's no reason to not expect Dobbs to be the odd man out right now.
Right. And the question, you know, the interesting question is going to be, will anybody claim Josh Dobbs or will he get to the practice squad? That's going to be the question. I mean, you know, Ray in his chat said, you know, well, maybe they'll make up an injury, gets to IR. And, you know, maybe he does get hurt.
That all sounds good. I hear that all the time. But agents,
nobody does that.
Agents would because these kids have split salaries, you know?
Right. And yeah, exactly. So for Dobbs, you know, I think Dobbs has a legit chance to get through to the practice squad. Maybe he'll look bad enough that they'll just say we're done with him because they haven't carried a quarterback on the practice squad because he's not going to get any reps.
You know what's going to happen? Bill Belichick's going to claim him.
And he's going to start week three.
What's going to happen is Dobbs going to end up a Patriot. What's going to happen? You want to talk about Steeler fans really hitting the roof then. Look, logic tells you right now that Dobbs is going to be the Brian St. Pierre, I think, of this year. That you know he's going to be the odd man out. But I think you want to get a good look at Mason Rudolph during the preseason. I really do. I really think you want to get a good look at him because let's face it. 2019, you're expecting him to at worst, you know, to be your number two.
Yeah, I think the start of 2019. But again, you know, all of a sudden, you look back and say, you know, Charlie Batch and Byron Leftwich, who was number two, who was number three. You have two veteran guys. You know, Landry Jones, we'll see if he gets any playing time. Here's a couple things to understand is most quarterbacks don't make it in the NFL. And right now, people think Mason Rudolph's going to be Ben Roethlisberger by 2019. I think that's the perception that I get from Steeler fans. I mean, if you look at the comments to Alex's article, everybody's like, you know, they think Mason Rudolph's going to be the next coming. He might be, but odds are he won't be. And, you know, where are we going to get to see him play against, you know, high-level competition? I don't know. We're not going to get to see it this preseason, I don't think, because the only time teams really play their first-team defense – is, you know, weeks three and week four. Maybe guys get some snaps week two. But, you know, Ben's going to probably get his, you know, his quarter of play in week three. And Landry's probably going to get, you know, some play in week three and in week four. So I don't know that we're going to see him against any high-level competition. And, again, I mean, look, there's a couple good articles out there. There's, you know, there are some other Steeler sites. You can go find them. Go Google them. One's on Dan Kovacevic's site. You know, guys, look, Mason Rudolph has flaws in his game. There's a reason other teams didn't, you know, quarterback needy teams, the Patriots. They're killing the Patriots up in the, you know, read the Boston Globe or any of the papers. They took Ettinger, the kid from LSU, who, yeah, he didn't turn the ball over, but he doesn't have a big arm, can hardly complete a pass from LSU in the seventh round. They had picks. They passed out. They backed out of the second round twice. They need a quarterback. All they've got is Brian Hoyer. They looked at Mason Rudolph and didn't think he was the developmental quarterback that they wanted. And Brady might be a lot closer to Ben than the retiring. So, you know, the idea that Mason Rudolph is the heir apparent to Ben Roethlisberger is ridiculous. And people who want to get Mason Rudolph, you know, want to see Ben Roethlisberger retire so Mason Rudolph can play in 2020, you're insane. Be Randy Fittner. He wants Ben to play 4, 5, or 6 more years. Be Kevin Colbert. We want Ben around as long as he wants to play. If things work out great, Mason Rudolph, the Steelers will make a decision in year 4 what to do with Mason Rudolph, and he's never started a game because Ben Roethlisberger is a Pro Bowl, Super Bowl winning 4-time Super Bowl winning quarterback. I mean, you know, this guy may never see the field with the Steelers.
There's no way you can point to the fence and say, oh, they got the steal of the draft of the quarterback. This is the heir apparent to Roethlisberger to keep things moving without a hiccup.
Insane to say that.
Look at all the quarterbacks over the years that have been drafted, whether it be first round, second, third, fourth, whatever. I mean, how many of these guys just
Blaine Gabbert. I mean, you know, just start, you know, start with the other. Who was the other kid taken who was out of football that same draft? No, Jake Locker. You know, there you go. Blaine Gabbert, Jake Locker, top 12 picks out of football 3 years later.
I mean, how many of these guys?
Getting Locker.
I mean, just, you know, Whedon. How many of these guys just, well, this guy might be it. I mean, all you can do is buy a ticket into it, do your homework on. Here's the thing. The Steelers have said in the last couple of years, well, we evaluate in quarterbacks, you know, practicing and all like that. Okay, they've had a couple where they've seriously done it now. But even then, we think Rudolph might be based on his college film. You put him behind center in an NFL. Go back to the year that Brady was drafted. One of the Brady, what is it, six, the kid of the 49ers. What was his name? I'm drawing a blank.
Garoppolo, you mean?
No. 49ers, back when Brady was drafted. That class.
Oh, yeah. Tim Rattay.
No, it wasn't him. One of the Brady six. I'm drawing a blank what his damn name is. Hold on a minute here. It's killing me. The six quarterbacks picked before Giovanni Carmazzi. That's it.
Out of Hofstra.
You knew the school. You didn't know the player.
I couldn't come up with his name either, but I do know who he was.
But, remember him. Remember what? Chad Pennington. No, Chad Pennington had his once they cracked his shoulder open, you know, it's like.
Well, Steelers took the kid out of Tennessee.
You know, the jar of pickles.
T. Martin.
Yeah. Who else? Chris Redmond that year. I mean, look, just go back through history and look at all these quarterbacks that were drafted, even those in the first three rounds. And we thought, how many of the – and look at how many Super Bowl winning quarterbacks there have been, different ones, since Brady's first.
Let me throw one other thing out there, Dave. And I don't know that, you know, everybody – the thing that I'm having the most trouble with – is people think that the transition to him understanding this offense. College offenses are becoming less sophisticated, almost run and shoot. Wide open spread offenses, they're not sophisticated. First read, hit it. Wide receivers run two routes. They stay on the same side of the ball. These are not sophisticated things. NFL offenses are becoming more sophisticated. Defenses are doing so many more different things. You've got to read coverages. You've got to understand things. Forget who's got more upside talent. Just the idea that Mason Rudolph is going to kind of come in and understand this Steelers offense by week one is naive. That's just not going to happen.
Here's the thing. He is a good lottery ball, in my opinion. I'm glad, you know, of the ones that I've been on record. I like Rudolph better than Lamar Jackson, but I'm not going to point to the fence and say, this is a guy that's going to play another 14 years after Ben Roethlisberger is done. I mean, I don't know that yet. Look, I mean, he's coming out of college. He's not as good a quarterback as Ben Roethlisberger was. You want to talk about arm strength? If you want to knock on Mason Rudolph, it's the velocity. Okay. Look, you want a good representation though of who Mason Rudolph is? Go watch the Oklahoma State game. You'll see the whole gamut, I think, on good, bad, ugly with Mason Rudolph. I mean, he makes some spectacular throws in that game. He also makes a very, you know, very poor decision down in the red zone on an interception there. His progressions, you can see both good and bad in that game. You can see him throwing out the look to the long side of the field away from him where the velocity is not there. With him. I mean, you want to go seriously watch a good game and see who Mason Rudolph is, go watch that game. That said, you know, I think it's a good lottery, a good lottery ticket to buy, and that's exactly what the Steelers did. In the value axis was higher, you know, was high enough in the round there that it was worth the pick. Now, where it all goes from here, who the hell knows? Now, here's a good question. I wrote this up, and people automatically took this as me running Ben Roethlisberger out of town. Will Ben Roethlisberger see another contract extension?
So I thought it was a very interesting discussion point. And here's what I think, Dave. And I think I know that – look, I've seen it up close and personal. I know the relationship that Ben has with the Rooneys. I don't think the Steelers will ever franchise Ben because I think they'll get to agreements that are mutually agreeable. And whether those are one-year deals that are around the franchise number or whatever, I think they'll get to contracts. You know, is he going to sign a three-year contract next year or get a two-year extension or, you know, whatever? Don't have the answer to that. I don't ever see them using the franchise tag. I think your point was correct. You know, you're going to get to numbers that are big numbers. They're going to pay him market rate. But I really honestly, you know, I think that it might be to the point where they're happy to go. They might be both be happy to go year by year. Now, that does give the Steelers a hammer should they choose to use it. But, you know, I think, you know, if Ben wants to retire, the Steelers aren't going to franchise him. So I think the point, your point is right on the mark. My guess is, you know, if things go, you know, healthy and everything is okay this year, they have Ben signed up another year through 2020 and maybe go that way, you know, the extra year. And when he retires, if he has a year on his deal, he retires and the Steelers don't have to pay the money. So I think it'll be very amiable.
So you're expecting, he's under contract through 2019, and if he's not going to get is there any reason to give him a deal now, between now and the start of the regular season?
No. You know, what I would do is, the more I think about it, is I would just roll another year onto the back end every year. So he's got another year of security if he wants to come back. If he wants to retire, he can do that. So just keep adding a year at market rate.
All right, so wouldn't it behoove...
Which is essentially franchising him, I get that.
Right, and that's why I'm making the point here, is the prime opportunity, if you're going to sign him to an extension, obviously... Okay, let me ask you this. Come the middle of next year, next March, if Ben has not signed... Do you think Ben will have signed some sort of an extension by the middle of March next year? And if not, will he get
it? Yeah, the answer is yes. Middle of March, after the draft, sometime next summer.
Well, ideally you're going to do that before that $5 million roster bonus is paid to him in early March. So if you're going to do it, you do it, you know, February or whatnot, or very early March.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the exact calendar, when dates or when, but yeah, the answer is when it makes the most sense. Yeah, I think it'll be done.
If they don't do it by the time he's paid his $5 million roster bonus, then odds are good he's not going to get a contract extension before the regular season starts, right? In 2019.
Well, I'm less concerned about the timing and whatever. I think when Ben plays 2019, he will be under contract for the year 2020.
Okay. I'll take the other side of that bet. As we sit here right now, I mean, look, it could easily go. It would not surprise me. I would not surprise if they do sign him to an extension, though. I would expect it to be more than 1 year. You know, I would expect it to be, you know, let's add 3 years onto it or whatnot. And you want to talk about a fan base going to go ballistic then? Then they're going to say, then why the hell did you draft Mason Rudolph then? Look, here's the thing to think about with Mason Rudolph.
Well, I mean, why did the Niners draft Jimmy Garoppolo? Because everybody knows the position's important. B, your quarterback can get injured at any point in time. see is maybe it did find a jewel, you know, a diamond in the rough. And, you know, D is, you know, maybe Ben's mind changes again. You know, and you know, new news comes out about concussions and stuff, or, you know, there's a family event, or, you know, who knows how those things go. So, I mean, I'm really glad they didn't take him in the first round. I don't hate the pick in the third round. I hope he never plays for the Steelers because Ben's the quarterback the whole way and still playing great.
At worst, you have your back. You think you have your backup quarterback situation solved through the next 4 years.
Correct. That, and if that didn't happen, that means the pick was a bust. That means Rudolph was a bust.
Absolutely. Now, as far as Ben goes, if you wanted to, you could roll this thing out 4 more years. Let him play out the next 2 years of his contract, franchise him after the 2019 season, and then franchise him again after after that season. So, will Ben – look, I think everybody – and Randy put this best. I mean, if Ben's still playing good, I mean, he hopes Ben's still there for the next 6 years. What do – give me a percentage of what you think the likelihood is that Ben is the starting quarterback for the Steelers in, let's see, 18, 19, 2000, 2001. What is the likelihood that Ben Roethlisberger?
21.
Right. It's season 2021. What is the likelihood of that?
50%.
Okay.
Because I think it's 100% this year, 100%. Again, barring anything catastrophic, okay? 100% this year, 100% next year, 80% 2020.
Okay, and then 50% the year after that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, of course, after the 2000, you know, Mason Rudolph's going to sign a 4-year contract, and then you have to decide what to do with him. You know, the whole Jimmy Garoppolo thing at that point. You know, heck, maybe you flip him. You know, maybe he's shown enough in whatever. You know, look, hopefully he doesn't have to play but a mop-up, you know, game here and there, and a Week 17 game and all. Maybe you're able to flip him. You know, for a high draft pick or whatever. So, look, we're spending a lot of time for a guy that's not going to play the next two years.
We spent a lot of time on Josh Dobbs last year too.
Yeah, we did, and he could be gone. I mean, we might not ever see him do anything here. So, I mean, it's what we do, I guess. But there is an argument to be made, though, that Ben might not ever sign another extension.
Sure. Sure, he could retire after 19. You know, there could be the franchise tag. Absolutely, it was a good topic to bring up. Good discussion.
Look,
yeah, we banged a long one out today.
And look, I mean, it's gonna be interesting to see how with the first words out of Ben's mouth when he's asked about Rudolph. I mean, I thought Randy hit on it good talking about Ben likes this kind of competition. Maybe it'll make
there's no competition though. That's the other thing. Nobody's. But nobody obviously is realistically suggest, like, you know, he likes having good players come to camp to work with, right? That's the answer, right?
Okay, Ben competing against the notion. How's that?
Yeah, that's good.
Maybe that's a better choice of words there. Lord, what did we not cover today? I tell you one thing, we couldn't remember who the Houston wide receiver is. We couldn't.
Right.
We couldn't recall a couple.
Hell, I couldn't come up with Javon Hargrave.
Yeah, we couldn't recall a couple of names here. The old age is catching up with us. Real quick, before we get out of here, David, I want to go over a couple of people who donated for us. George Martin, thank you for the donation. Kathleen Gerhold, thank you for the donation very much. Daniel Heidman, thank you. Let's see who's another one here. Joe Martin, thank you. Trying to roll through these. Todd Schroner, thank you for the donation. Jeremy Barbati, thank you for the donation. Nicholas Shinada, thank you. Boy, a bunch of them. Eric Popejoy, thank you for the donation, Eric. Larry Brooks, thank you. Eric Linda Mulder, thank you. Charles Munger, thank you for the donation. Andrew Bell, thank you. Jeremy Clark, thank you. I'm having to open these emails. William Adams, thank you. David Bronstein, thank you. Ken I see Ken on Twitter all the time. Ken Pacioco, did I say it right, Ken? I'm sorry if I didn't. Lawrence Day, thank you. Randy Bucksbaum, thank you. Boy, there's several more. I know I'm going to leave some people out here. Spencer Crick, my buddy, thank you. Aton Rayo, and there's a few more. I'll try to rattle some more of these off later here. But you get the notion there, folks. Thank you for donating to the show there. In the meantime, David and I think will be back on Friday. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do, want to donate to the cause, you want to help with memory pills for both David and myself, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. Talk to you on Friday.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.